What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Vinberg, and today we're going to be talking about a plethora of things. Number one on that is the Washington Wizards are a terrible team. You knew that. They've lost six straight. They're at the bottom of the barrel in the league, and I'm sure that's some good news to pretty much everyone that's watching. So we're going to dive into that and into the road ahead, because it's not like it's going to get any easier for the next week or so for Washington. I also want to talk about the Twitter beef between Rockets fans and Wizards fans, mainly over the Alex Starr, Reed Shepard, G League send down controversy. I don't think it was that deep, but it hits home on a bigger issue that I definitely want to address. So that's something that I want to dive into as well. And then kind of round it up, obviously, we'll have our tank standings, our look ahead. And then Josh Robbins of The Athletic released a report discussing Jonas Valanciunas and his trade value and what the Wizards could get back for him potentially in a couple of trades. So I'm going to dive into all that. But first and foremost, I want to start the show with a bit of a rant. This is going to be centered around the Reed Shepard news of a week ago. He was sent down to the G League because I saw a lot of rationalizing from Rockets fans. And for a little bit of history, this all stems from the Rockets getting absolutely bailed out in the lottery when they realistically shouldn't have. I don't know where they are. They were probably around, like, I don't know, 10, maybe 9. I don't know where they were, but they ended up getting 3. They got Reed Shepard, tremendous prospect, best shooter in the draft by far. I'm sure he's going to have a great NBA career. But, you know, after Alex Starr went, 0 of 12 in summer league, really struggled for 4 games, you had a bunch of Rockets fans, people that are big on Rockets Twitter, you know, tweeting out things like, thank you to the Washington Wizards for picking Alex Starr basically at 2 and allowing us to get Reed Shepard. We got the Rockets really got the best player in the draft. You know, crazy takes like that. And it's mainly from this guy, Brett O. And look, I want to preface this. Like, I respect this guy as a content creator. I'm sure he's a nice guy. And this isn't like any type of like beef with like the individual. I disagree wholeheartedly with how he has kind of gone about this Reed Shepard and Alex Starr thing. Look, they're both young players. They're both going to have their struggles. They're both going to have their really great games. But when we handpick when to post about, you know, only the great stuff with Reed Shepard, and then we only highlight the bad stuff with Alex Starr, it's like, what are we really here to do? Are we here to push some sort of agenda? Basically, like, the Rockets got the best player. I'm going to show you all the bad with Alex Starr and then all the good with Reed Shepard. But I'm never going to talk about how Alex Starr just won Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month. I'm never really going to, you know, talk the way I probably should talk about Reed Shepard getting sent down to the G League. Because this is the post that started it all. It was this guy Bredo on Twitter, at Bredo NBA. Again, if you're a Rockets fan, follow him. He does great stuff. He tweeted out, people will see Reed Shepard going to the G League as the number 3 pick and assume he's some sort of bust. That just isn't the case. Most top picks are able to work through slumps, but Houston isn't rebuilding. You know, he'll be fine, basically. And look, I agree with that take. I do think it was the best situation for Reed Shepard to be sent down into the G League. Because Houston has a different type of season. They're the top, one of the top teams in the league. They really can't afford to have a guy like Reed Shepard who, you know, struggled shooting the ball. They can't really have him on the floor if he's being a liability because they're trying to win games. Whereas, you know, a team like the Wizards, they're trying to pretty much lose games. So it doesn't matter if these guys aren't good now, they're going to play. But you can't have it both ways. That's my point here. You can't sit there during summer league after 2 or 3 games and basically say, thank you to the Washington Wizards for allowing us to basically get the best player, as you said, in this draft class. Thank you to the Washington Wizards for basically drafting Alex Starr. He's clearly a bust. And he was like, I didn't call him a bust. You called him a bust without calling him a bust. If you really want to play with words and stuff like that, sure, you didn't call him a bust. But you're literally just pushing certain narratives. You can't say Alex Starr, like, look at his stats, man. He's really struggling. But then when your rookie starts to struggle, you can't just say, hey, man, he's getting sent down to the G League, but he's just going to take his time, you know, be patient with him. But after 2 games of summer league, you know, the agenda's out on Alex Starr. He sucks. You can't do that. It's pure rationalization. And I don't understand why Rockets fans can't just sit there and say, you know what? We do not care what Alex Starr is. Like, the Wizards and Rockets really won't have to face each other more than twice in a season unless they play each other in the finals. There's no rivalry there. The Wizards and the Rockets are pretty much existing in different planets. And so to really like hone in on that, and you know, that's something that rubbed the wrong way. I saw my guy Damo tweeted something as well. And then obviously Reed Shepard dropped like 49 in his first game of the G League, like as he should. you know, you're the number three pick, you're going against a bunch of G League guys, you should play very well. And now that was a very, very good game. But at the same time, like, you can't have it both ways. You can't be, you know, hyping some, you know, your player up and then, you know, basically tweeting out the lowlights of one player when he sucks. But then when it comes to your player sucking in the NBA, you just go up and say he needs more time. They're rookies. They're both, what, 19? Why don't you just give both of them time? That's, it rubbed me the wrong way. So that's how I wanted to start the show. And it was the same thing with Cam Whitmore. Like, Cam Whitmore had, you know, a really good summer league game against the Wizards. And I don't know if it was this guy, Bredeau. I don't want to put words in his mouth. But I saw some people on Rockets Twitter questioning whether Cam Whitmore would go before Bilal Coulibaly in a redraft. Look, Cam Whitmore's a solid player, but he seems like he wants to get up and out of there in Houston. And it looks like Bilal Coulibaly is legit. So pause those takes too. Just give it time. Summer league means nothing. I told you guys back in summer league means nothing. It's what happens in the real league. And Alex Saar has been phenomenal. Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month. Reed Shepard's in the G League. And he's playing great in the G League. We didn't draft him to dominate the G League. You drafted him to dominate the pros. And so far, he hasn't been able to dominate the pros. Neither has Alex Saar. And maybe that's because they're both 19 and rookies. Maybe you should realize that. So that's how I wanted to start the show. A bit of a rant there. Hopefully we're warmed up now. Moving on. Obviously, like that prefaced the Wizards game against the Rockets. The Rockets, you know, great first quarter for the Wiz, 30-20, then blown out. There's not really much to talk about in any of the last five games since I recorded a pod. I don't want to harp too much on the games because I don't think you guys listening honestly care what happened. You know they lost. You care about the main storylines. That's what I'm here to do. If you didn't watch the games, you can listen to this podcast, hopefully, and come away with, you know, an understanding of what the major storylines are around this team, who's playing well, who isn't playing well. And so I'm not going to go too much into like this, and this happened in the game. I think that's boring. One of the things that I did notice against Houston and against Philly is Corey Kispert. Corey Kispert has been tremendous the last couple of games. Back-to-back 23-point games versus Houston and Philly, shot 60% from the three-point line. Like, it's funny because Corey Kispert last year was, this is like his everyday. Like, he was so good. And after he signed that, you know, extension, it's been a little bit downhill. But, you know, lately he's come alive. Back-to-back games, like I said, 22 minutes, 0 points against Chicago to follow, then dropped 17 against the Thunder, 2 points the next night, only 18 minutes against Minnesota. Like, very hot and cold, very inconsistent for who I thought was the most consistent Wizard last season. So look, Corey Kispert's got it still. It's just inconsistent. I don't know if it's based on matchups, based on, you know, game plan, scheme, whatever, but it was cool to see him kind of, you know, come alive against Philly, made some big baskets down the stretch. I was at that game against Philly. I had decent seats, but one of the things I did notice is just the out coaching that occurred. I mean, you know, Washington was kind of trailing from the get-go. It was like 7-0 to begin with. Then, you know, they're basically within like 8-12 for the entirety of the second and third quarter. And then towards the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, they made a run and Brian Keefe, you know, made some big time adjustments. The defense, you know, hunkered down and you got stops, you got steals, ran in transition, and you came back and the Wizards took a lead. It was like 103-101. And like, I knew that they were going to lose. I think everyone knew they were going to lose. It's just what bad teams do. They find ways to lose. And the Wizards did. They completely collapsed down the stretch. You know, they were injured. Jordan Poole didn't play. Alex Saar didn't even go to the game. He was sick. But nonetheless, so was Philly. Paul George didn't play. Joel Embiid didn't play. Kyle Lowry didn't play. And you lost a game that realistically most of the teams in the league in that position would have won. So, again, it's all of these times where, you know, the Wizards seem to pull losses out of wins. It's not the other way around. Like, they pull defeat from the jaws of victory or whatever it is. Like, it's been a lot this year where I felt like they could have won the games. And, again, I don't mind when they're close and they end up losing just because they lack talent. Happened against Boston, sometime against Cleveland. Like, they have been like that sometimes. But the Philly game, don't be surprised. Like, it was not like that. The Philly, Nick Nurse had no idea what to do against some of the stuff that Washington was running defensively at the end of the game. He just gave it to Maxey. And you know, the Wizards couldn't figure it out offensively. They didn't have anybody to get him a bucket. And what's crazy is Kyle Kuzma was playing. Kyle Kuzma played against Philly, And, you know, he's usually that clutch coos, as the Wizards try to market him as. You know, he gets the ball down the stretch the last couple of years, and you're pretty confident, I guess, in it. And this year, it's been nothing like that. Down the stretch, game on the line, you're going to Jordan Poole. You're not even looking towards Kyle Kuzma. And that's kind of the drop-off you've seen from Kyle. And I think this is a decent segue into that, because, man, has Kyle Kuzma struggled, you know, pretty mightily, not only this season, but like the last couple of games. You know, he had like a 2 to 3 game stretch since coming off from the 12 game absence with a rib injury, where he looked great. Really, he looked solid. You know, he returned against who did he return against? Chicago. 5 points, 22 minutes off the bench, only took 3 shots, barely played, not counting that. And then you got at New Orleans, second game back, he had 14 points. Versus New Orleans, 28 points, 10 points versus Houston, 16 versus Philly. And then the last 3 games, man, he had a stretch against Chicago, Philadelphia, and OKC, where he shot 10 of 37 from the field in that stretch. Let me see, 2 of 16 from 3. He had an 0 of 10 stretch from deep. You know, 5 points versus Chicago, 6 points versus OKC. And this OKC one was the most egregious. He was 2 of 12, 0 of 6 from 3, shot 50% from the free throw line, 2 points or 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 6 points. He had 3 turnovers and a minus 40. You did not hear that. It's not a minus 4. It's not a minus 14. It is a minus 40, minus 40. How that even happens in a game in the NBA is just, it's awful. And Bob Carrington was a minus 41. He was equally as bad. Don't think that I'm only going to harp on Kuz because he's not going to be here pretty soon. Bob Carrington was awful too. But Kyle Kuzma, for the money he's getting paid and for, you know, the high profile, you know, top option he's supposed to be on this team, to be a minus 40, I don't care if it's the best against the best team in the West, that's egregious. It shows not only are you missing shots on offense, but you aren't doing anything on defense. Honestly, you're probably hurting the team on defense. And so it really gets down to, like, Wizards fans have turned on Kyle Kuzma. That's pretty obvious. But realistically, can you blame them? I mean, this guy's getting paid top dollar. He doesn't seem like he gives a flying fuck about the game. He obviously doesn't care about wins and losses based on his body language. He does. I saw a comment on Bullets Forever. Like, he just kind of plays slow this year. Like, there's not really pop in his game. I haven't seen him, like, hype up the crowd once or really get engaged, get into his teammates. Like, I don't know. It just kind of seems like he's just, like, there's just vibes out there. He's just playing basketball. There's not really any motivation to win. You know, he got the big contract. He's probably going to get traded to a contender by February. Like, what are you playing for? I don't, you know, and this is from an outside. I always have to preface this because I'm not in the locker room. I'm not at the games. I don't know for certain. But all I can really talk about is from an outsider's perspective, somebody that's watching like every other person that's listening to this right now. I haven't missed a Wizards game this year. And from what I've seen, it's just different. And I mentioned this on last episode, it's just something different with Kyle Kuzma. It's whether it's an attitude thing or whether it's an effort thing, a fatigue thing. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just a decline in production. But he's been bad. And the stats back it up too. I mean, look, he's averaging the lowest point total in 4 years that he's had. His last time averaging this was his last season in LA when he averaged 13 points per game off the bench. I don't get it. He, you know, 14 and a half, this is season for Kyle Kuzma, season averages, 14 and a half points per game, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. The shooting splits are absolutely egregious, by the way, for 24-25. 43% from the field, 25% from 3. And he's never been an elite, efficient 3-point shooter. I mean, the last couple years, it's been 34, 36, 33, 33. Pretty okay. I'd say average, honestly. But this year, 25% from 3? You know, especially when you're supposed to be that top option. It's just, it's a big part of his game. And I feel like teams have stopped respecting his shot, and he really can't facilitate, use the pump fake like he used to, and it's hurting him. And so I just, I don't get, I don't get I do get the pushback from Wizards fans. Like, look, if this guy isn't going to be on our team and he doesn't look like he wants to be there, then what are we doing? Like, let's get him gone. Let's find a suitable trade partner, get whatever you can, and open up playing time, because it's no secret. Like, Bilal Coulibaly plays a lot better without him. And I don't know what it is, whether it's just he's more confident, he thinks he has to take on a bigger scoring role, he just gets more shots. But at the same time, like, you got a guy like him that flourishes. I mean, look at Jared Butler. And I'm going to talk about this actually now. I was going to talk about it later in the show, but, you know, whatever. Jared Butler, after averaging, let me get these averages up actually, because I don't want to mess it up. I want to make sure that I give Jared Butler the shine he deserves. He dropped a career high 26 points against Philly, 7 assists, 4 boards, 11 of 19 from the field, and 3 of 3 from 3-point. Was the Wizards' best player by far in Philly. Was the reason that they were even close in that game, by the way. Followed it up with another great performance, the following night against Chicago. Like, he has been the Wizards' best player over that 4-game stretch. And then you get to the OKC game. And after averaging 19 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds on 56% from the field and 64% from 3, that's again 64% from 3, you decide you're going to bench Jared Butler. I mean, what the fuck are we doing? And I'm sorry for the language. I've been trying not to curse, but what the fuck are we doing? Who thinks like that? What coach looks at Jared Butler's production over the past 4 games, sees his numbers, sees his plus minus, sees that he's affecting winning on both ends of the floor, and says, you know what, because of that, I'm going to put him on the bench. And I'm not even going to play him until the 8-minute mark of the fourth quarter, when we are, granted, getting smacked by the Thunder. And granted, again, you're supposed to get smacked by the Thunder, but at the same time, like, change something. You're throwing out the starters, and they're getting absolutely outworked, out-hustled, outclassed, out-talented, out-skilled, out-hearted, whatever you want to call it. And you decide, in the second half, I'm going to throw out the exact same lineups, same rotations. Like, what the fuck are we doing other than showcasing talent? And that is why I titled the pod, somebody gave a call to Brian Keith. Somebody upstairs. I don't know if it was Will Dawkins. I don't know if it was Michael Winger. I don't know if it was Ted Leonsis. Fuck it, it could have been Zach Leonsis. I don't know. But somebody made a call, because there's no way that a coach like Brian Keith, who has on numerous occasions called timeouts not even 30 seconds into the first quarter because he didn't like something he saw on the defensive end, he didn't like the effort he saw on offense, he doesn't just let things linger. But when you're down 27 points to the Thunder in the second half, and you're still throwing out the starting five, you're still deciding to play Jonas Valanciunas big minutes, even though he's doing absolutely nothing. You're still playing Kyle Kuzma big minutes, even though Keyshawn George might be the better option and will be here for the long haul. You have benched Jared Butler. You barely play Justin Champagne, even though they are great players that would help you win more than some of the guys you're playing. And you decide that, you know what, I'm going to play the same guys? Like, that's not Brian Keith. That's not his philosophy. If something doesn't work, he will bench you. He will change it. Like, it will call a timeout. It makes no sense. Why on earth, when you're getting destroyed these last couple of games, you're still throwing the same guys out? You slowly but surely, after Jared Butler started popping off, you're like, we're not going to trade him. Let's move him to the back of the bench. Champagne, we're not going to trade you. We found you. You're great. We're going to be at the bench. We're going to play guys like Valanciunas and Brogdon and Kuzma and all of these guys that don't deserve really to be playing big minutes over a guy like Butler and Champagne. Because we've been talking about culture ever since these guys got hired, talking about building culture, rewarding guys for playing well. And you sit here, you're 6-32, and yet you're not rewarding good play. You're just going out there and saying, we're going to play guys because we want to build their trade value. And look, I get it. This is the part of the rebuild that I said the entire season I wasn't looking forward to. If you listen to my preseason pod with my bro, that was my biggest pet peeve that I knew I would have to encounter this season, is watching guys that don't deserve minutes get minutes over guys that do deserve minutes. And man, have we seen that with Jared Butler and Champagne these last couple of games. It's frustrating. But February 6th is what? 3 weeks away? It's tough. These next 3 weeks are going to suck. I'll go through the schedule ahead, but it's not like the Wizards are going to win many games. It's going to be a long-ass, probably double-digit losing streak. And at the same time, you're not even having fun with it, because there's young guys that should be playing a lot more than they are. There's guys like Butler and Champagne that got it through the mud, worked their way through the G League, to get to where they are. They deserve minutes because they've been top 6 players on the Wizards the last week or so. And they aren't getting rewarded for that because we have other plans in mind. Again, I'm not going on this rant to say that I disagree with somebody making the call down. I'm just saying that it's frustrating. And I am saying I disagree with the fact that Jared Butler should get benched because it's not like you haven't been playing all season to showcase guys. And yet Jared Butler's been your backup point guard. He's been the best option there, but you're playing Malcolm Brogdon. And Malcolm Brogdon hasn't been terrible in his own right, but Jared Butler's been better. And if you want to build a culture, you can't just sit here and say, you know what, you've been our best player the last four games. Here's what I'm going to do for you. You can play the final 8 minutes of garbage time against the Thunder. And then you can play 6 minutes in the first quarter against the Timberwolves. And then you're just not really going to play until garbage time with a minute left. Speaking of Jared Butler, of course, it's frustrating. I mean, Butler combined with Champagne for, 17 minutes last night against the Timberwolves. Just incredibly frustrating. Again, I get it, and this is a long-winded rant, but it's so tough, I'm sure, for fans of the Wizards to just, like, sit here. And the amount of messages that have gone unprovoked, like just people reaching out to me in my DMs and just saying, hey, Greg, I appreciate what you're doing, and I respect that you're watching the games, but look, I just can't do it, man. I can't continue to watch. I tried, but they're not even playing the young guys. They're not even playing the guys that are going to help them win, like Butler and Champagne. They're not even trying. And so why would I spend my time or even my money going to the games to watch that product when you're not even trying to win the games? You're not even doing everything that you possibly can to put out a winning product. So why would I pay to go to see this? Why would I waste my time watching it? I don't blame you. It was cool to see that we have a lot of ball knowers on Wizards Twitter, because the last straw for a lot of people seems to be that Jared Butler pretty much got relegated to the bench after being so great. A lot of people really like Jared Butler. I have a thing where every time he makes a good play, I'll tweet out, you know, Jared Butler, solid NBA player, because that's just what he is. He doesn't do anything remotely, you know, unbelievable. He's a solid, really solid 3-point shooter. You know, great court vision, you know, really great on defense, good hands, you know, steady playmaker, can guard, you know, several positions. He's solid, like I said. And it seems like the last straw for a lot of Wizards fans was like, look, you're literally just not, you're putting it in my face that you don't want to win games. You're literally saying, oh, this guy's good. He's playing well. Maybe too well. Sorry, you had fun watching him. Well, guess what, man? He's not going to play much anymore. And, you know, you just got to deal with it. And I'm sure a lot of Wizards fans thought that was a slap in the face. Just like, really? Like, we had something cool going. Champagne was balling. Butler was playing unbelievable. Dropped 26 against Philly. And you stop playing them to play guys like Kyle Kuzma, Valanciunas, Brogdon, that won't be here pretty soon. It's the theme of the season. It's the theme of rebuilding. It's probably the worst part of it. But I think a lot of Wizards fans clearly are fed up. And so I hope that fortunes start to turn soon. I mean, you look at the Pistons. They got 20, they're 21-19. That's a year after, you know, having the worst record at 14 wins in the league. So, like, it can be done quickly. You just got to get the right, you know, players in store. You got to develop the right way, draft the right way. And the Wizards are on their way to doing that. But these are the dog days. I tweeted the other day, like, this is the lowest point of the rebuild. And that was after the Thunder win. And I had a lot of people message me and say, look, I get it. But, like, they got killed against the Thunder. Like, what did you really expect? And, yeah, that's an expected result. But you don't expect to lose by 41 points at home on any given night. Like, you're all NBA players. The Wizards were pretty healthy against the Thunder, regular starting five, and you just got outworked. Like, it wasn't like just skill thing. It was you weren't even ready from the tip. You lost the game, or felt like the game was lost before you even started playing. You were intimidated. You didn't really think that you could win the game, which is never good. Lost by 41 at home. Here's just a couple bullets about the Thunder game. SGA got literally the loudest MVP chants that I've heard in a while at Capital One Arena. 59 seconds into the game with 11:01 in the first quarter, he was shooting free throws. And at 11:01, loud MVP chants. You haven't even heard those for a guy like Poole at home that by no means should be talked about in the MVP consideration. But neither should certain guys like LaMelo Ball at times. And you hear him getting MVP chants in Charlotte when they're playing really well. It's just not a thing. But when another team comes in, it happens all the time for Tatum, happens all the time for Embiid, happens all the time for Steph and LeBron. It's a theme of people taking over this arena, people taking over the Wizards arena, opposing fans specifically, taking over Capital One Arena. And it's frustrating. It's sad. It's a sad reality because, like, there's no fight back. You know, if that would happen in a place like Philly, And a bunch of Knicks fans tweeting MVP, or chanting MVP for Brunson, you're going to be drowned out with booze. But if the Wizards are, you know, don't have many fans, I mean, honestly, to begin with, but that are going to games, because realistically, who is going to pay any type of money to watch this product, to watch the team that you root for lose by 40 points at home, to not even, you know, have any semblance of hope that they're going to win a game against a team like that? You're not going to go. So that was sad. Butler playing 8 minutes. That was ridiculous after being the best player of the last four games. Starter shot 27% from the field. They were absolutely terrible. Sixth straight loss, fell to 6-31. It was so bad from all around. And I tweeted this because mainly it showed the gap. It showed just how far the Wizards had to get to, because the Thunder have kind of been that baseline for the Wizards in the rebuild, and kind of how most rebuilding teams now want to do it, to where when you arrive on the scene, like, you are that team. And they are that team, apart from the Cavs, to beat. And so, again, that was just frustrating. It really showed me and a bunch of Wizards fans, like, they have so long to go in this. And you really need that number one option. And, you know, hopefully they get in this draft. I'm going to talk about Flag in a bit, but they really need that generational player. They need that number one option. I've been vocal about the fact that I don't think that player is on the roster. I think you got a bunch of really solid young players, but I don't think you have the guy. But I think this draft features three of the guys. I mean, if you saw Cooper Flagg against Notre Dame the other day, what do you have? I tweeted it out. Let me find it. 42, 7, and 6 on 14 shots. You want me to go? I can go on. 11 of 14 from the field. I don't think I have to. 42 on 14 shots should just be perfectly fine. To showcase what he did. 4-6 from 3, 16 to 17 from the line. Duke won, obviously. He's just so elite. And a couple weeks ago, honestly, Dylan Harper was playing so well. I was just kind of like, you know, maybe it's a situation like that. But, I mean, just look at what happened with Wemby. Like, yeah, you legit had guys coming out here saying maybe take Scoot. And look at how that's worked out. Maybe take Brandon Miller. Like, both of those guys, Scoot's not that great, but Brandon Miller's great. But he's not Wemby. And I think that the class could start to be like, yeah, Dylan Harper is sick and Ace Bailey is going to be great, but they ain't Cooper Flagg. Cooper Flagg is NBA ready. Cooper Flagg could come into the league right now, and I'm very confident he could average double digit points. As of what is he, 17 still? So look, that performance kind of got me hyped. A lot of Wizards fans liked that tweet. A lot of Wizards fans were putting up the flag memes in the chat. Capture the flag. That's been my favorite one. The capture the flag memes. I've envisioned it for, I already have this post planned out. So I'm just going to, it's in my drafts and I hope that I can put it out, but it just says flag captured. I think that's a sick headline, by the way. I'm trademarking that. So if another, like the Washington Post or something, if the Wizards get the number one pick, don't use that because it's mine. But flag captured, that's pretty sick. I'll let you know now, this pod's been all over the place, but who cares? I did Tankathon today. I did 10 tries. If you don't know Tankathon, it's basically you sim the lottery for the NBA based on the odds, based on where the teams are now. The Wizards are the worst team, so basically have the best odds to stay in the top five and 14% to get number one. I did it 10 times. I'm just going to let you know right now. 8 of the 10 times, I got number five. The first 7 times, the Wizards fell to number five. The only other times was when they got number one and when they got number four. So please keep that in mind. Your hopes should be at the ground. You shouldn't have any, honestly, because look at what happened to Detroit last year. Look at what happened to the Wizards. They were a lottery ball away from getting Wemby. Like, they are legitimately so close. They were a lottery ball away last year from getting one, which didn't matter. But you know, I am more confident the Wizards are going to get number five than I am of them getting any of the top three. Like, honestly, I'm fine with three at this point because I know they're not going to get one. They're probably not going to get two. All I was hoping for last year and what I will this year is for Mark Tatum, who reads off the cards, to basically go through five, not be the Wizards. And I'm like, okay, four, I can maybe rationalize, but like, you want the top three. There's a pretty, I think, steep drop off between, I think, the top three guys and the rest. And then once you get past four and the Wizards are firmly in that top three and then they go to commercial break, I guess top four is commercial break, but I'm content. Obviously, you want number one. Obviously, you'd prefer number two to number three. But if you tell me right now that you get number three in this draft, or there's like a 14% possibility you get number one, I think I might just take number three and run. That's how, and I hate, I could talk about this for days about how messed up the lottery system is. Like the fact that Atlanta, who didn't need the number one pick, got it. And I'm happy they got a bum. I wouldn't say a bum, but like compared, you know, comparatively speaking to number one overall picks, you know, Reese Hoshea would have not gone there in most years. And so they didn't really get too lucky. But they did. They should have gone, the 10th pick, and they ended up getting one. Houston shouldn't have gone a top pick. They got three. The other years, like, the Pelicans should never get Zion. It's just like, you can't have these teams in small markets and have all of these big-name free agents only going to your LAs and Phillies and New Yorks of the world and never going to small market teams. Yet, how do you expect a small market team to rebuild when they keep getting, you know, fleeced in the lottery, when they don't get lucky? And this is speaking from a team that sucks and where it would benefit the Wizards, obviously, from this point. But like, the Wizards are tanking. The Jazz are tanking. The Raptors are pretty, I don't know what they're doing, but they're kind of tanking. The Pelicans at this point are probably looking to trade people and tank. Tanking exists. It's just not as open as it used to be. Like, the Wizards are not trying to really win games like they should. And I don't think the lottery system realistically deters teams from tanking, from rebuilding, from doing any of that. It just makes it harder. It doesn't deter it. That's where I'm trying to get at. It makes it more difficult to rebuild because you literally all the whole Wizards season last year all came down to a lottery ball. Because let's say they get like the fifth pick or the sixth pick, that changes everything. This year, if they get the fifth pick versus the number one pick, that changes everything. So I don't like that it all comes down to luck in the NBA. I think if you endure a rebuild and maybe you're tanking, but like you're losing revenue, you've clearly committed to it, you traded all your good players, your fans are checked out, and you've really committed to that for 2, 3, 4 years, you deserve to get a top pick. It's bullshit, realistically, for a team like Atlanta, who's a middle-of-the-pack team, not committing one way or the other, and to just get bailed out with the number one pick, and a team like the Wizards, who tears it all down because they know that's the really only way they can right the ship, and you maybe fall to five, like, man, that's tough. That's tough. But look, you see a lot of these teams that rebuild. The successful ones get the guy. Look at the Pistons. They got one. They have Cade. They got the guy. Jalen Green's been phenomenal for the Rockets with the second pick. They kind of maybe got their guy. And obviously, you have the draft well around them, signed good free agents and stuff. But you need the guy. And I don't think the Wizards have the guy on their team. And I think this draft features... I think it features 2.5 the guys. I think Harper and Flagg are guys. I want to say Ace Bailey as well, but like, I don't know. I'd say 2.5 to 3 guys, you know, number one options possibly in this draft. But it's just, it underscores how important that mid-May date is going to be with the Wizards and the lottery, because man, it's going to be stressful. A lot more stressful than last year, because realistically, if you got two or whatever you got, you're getting an okay prospect. And the Wizards got lucky that year. You just got to hope to replicate it again. So look, realistically, where do the Wizards sit now? I put out a tweet today, and I think we're going to do this every Tuesday. I think that's just a fun thing to put out every Tuesday. And it's just kind of like a tank update. Like, you know, next four games for the Wiz, updated tank standings. As of right now, the Washington Wizards are at the bottom. I don't have an applause meter. I'm not really good with editing the pods. But a round of applause, because they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. It sucks because they're not playing guys that I want to see play. But I get it. They are woefully bad. They had a nice little stretch there where they got six wins. Me and my guy Matt Moderno did a pod, and Matt asked me, do you think the Wizards are maybe a little too good at 6-25? Matt and I both agreed, no, they're terrible still. And since then, they lost six straight, so you can thank Matt and I for that. They're 6-31, the Wizards. They are awful, and they aren't getting better anytime soon. So they're pretty firmly there at the bottom. At 6-31, you got some competition. Sorry, 6-32. What am I doing? Completely forgot that they just lost last night. but they're 6-32. You got the Pelicans underneath them. It's at 8-32. They've lost one straight. The Wizards have lost six straight, by the way. Pelicans have lost one. Hornets at 8-28. They lost one. The Raptors right there, 9 wins, 9-31. They actually just beat the Warriors at the end of the game. That was pretty big. Jazz just won 10-28. They're distancing themselves. And like I said last week, there's kind of a gap. The five bad teams, and then there's like a cutoff, and then there's like the Nets, the Blazers, and then another cutoff, then the Sixers. Because like the Nets and the Blazers have 13 wins apiece. Nets are kind of falling, lost five in a row. But like these teams are bad, and they're not going to get good anytime soon. They might even trade some guys. The Sixers are going to get Embiid back. They're going to kind of be in that play-in area, so I'm not concerned. So realistically, the Wizards have six other teams in competition. Two of them, the Nets and the Blazers, aren't really comp. And teams like the Jazz and the Raptors, they have the talent to win some games. They've been winning some games. It's the Hornets, the Pelicans, and the Wizards. That's what I've been saying all year. That's the comp. But the Wizards, as of right now, their only comp is themselves. Like, the Wizards just lose out. Obviously, they have the they can't fall outside the top five. So that's an update. And then you look at the road ahead. I mean, the road ahead is pretty brutal, if I'm being real about the Wiz. You got a home game against Phoenix, ends a three-game homestand. They're 19-19. They've beaten some bad teams. Like, they are not good. They beat the Hornets. They beat the Jazz. Like, they aren't good by any stretch of the imagination. But they're going to come into Washington. Beal's return. They're going to beat the Wizards. Fun fact, this was actually a TNT game, by the way. And I don't know why it was, because maybe if it was Brad's first game here, which was on NBA TV, I think, which shows how irrelevant the team is. I mean, any other guy that averages 30 a game for a couple years, multi-time all-star, a decade with the team, bunch of playoff runs, returns home for the first time, that's a ESPN NBA on TNT game, and the Wizards couldn't even get that. They pulled an NBA TV game, which just shows that absolutely nobody cares about them whatsoever. But nonetheless, they got Phoenix no longer on TNT because they realized the Wizards suck, and the Suns kind of do too, and nobody really cares about Beal because he might be traded. So that's just regular on Monumental Sports. Tickets are as low as $7 for the Wizards game, which is absolutely crazy, but can't blame them either. And then they got a big road trip. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games in a row on the road, and I don't think they're going to win any, even the game against Utah. They're at Golden State, at Sacramento, and a back-to-back. And then they are at Los Angeles, at Utah, at Phoenix, and they end the trip at Dallas. They're going to get killed. They're going to – not get killed, but they're going to lose to Phoenix at home. They're going to lose to Golden State, Sacramento, L.A., Phoenix, and Dallas on the road. Where they could maybe snag a win is at Utah. Like, I don't think the Jazz are particularly good, but, again, they've beaten some decent teams. So I could see them beating the Wizards. Again, like the Wizards have lost six straight. Realistically, if they don't beat the Jazz, that's another 7 games that they could lose. That's 13. Come up against Toronto, and that's where they might win. But the road ahead doesn't get any easier, and I'm sure that's music to Wizards fans' ears, because like you're trying to lose, and I get it. But this last month before the trade deadline is the worst, because you got guys like Butler and Champagne that should be playing and aren't. You got a bunch of guys that are struggling, you know, veterans that are struggling, and you're still playing them. And that's frustrating. One thing I did want to get to before I wrap this up is the asking price for Jonas Valanciunas. Josh Robbins of The Athletic, David Aldridge of The Athletic, they put out an article today detailing the league-wide kind of consensus on Valanciunas from, I guess, a couple of NBA execs that they talked to. I'd recommend reading the article, but this is just an excerpt from the article. One league source whose team is not currently involved with the Wizards in discussions about Valanciunas believes that two second rounders, will wind up being the maximum Washington can get for them. That's 2 second rounders. Apologies for that. So, you know, for a guy at the beginning of the year that I think I said is the ceiling, they could get a first. I mean, clearly I was wrong, and I don't think he's played bad. I think he's done pretty much what people expected, you know, high rebound type of guy, scores in the low post, pretty non-existent defensively at the rim, pretty slow in terms of the pick and roll, but he's just a body. He's a body down low. He's a really serviceable backup big, and I can see a lot of contending teams biting at that asking price. I think the Wizards are starting to stockpile a lot of second-round picks, and that's tough when a lot of rebuilds get kickstarted with first round picks like the Thunder did, but the Wizards just don't have the talent to do that. And so when you're handicapped with the start of the rebuild and Beal and Porzingis, and you can only really get seconds for them, you turn around and you can't really get much for some of your other vets too. And I foresee this happening for Brogdon as well with the return. So look, I think the Wizards are going to be active in shopping Valanciunas. Him being on a 3-year deal helps a little bit because it's not like the Tyus Jones expiring deal situation where they have to move on from him. They don't have to move on from him right now. There's a little bit of leverage there. But at the same time, if you really don't have any bidders and you got one team saying, here's 2 second-round picks, you know, take it or leave it, I think you just got to take it. Like, it opens up minutes for Sarr. You still have Bagley when he returns and Holmes to back him up and be veterans for him. You know, Valanciunas is replaceable. He's an older guy. He's not here, obviously, for the long haul. And I think, you know, it's kind of a – he's here for a bit. Mentor Sarr, plays decently. And then you get what you can get. I mean, that's always been the plan. And so, you know, 2 second-round picks is what Robbins and Aldridge are reporting at The Athletic. You know, we'll see if they can get it. I think there's going to be suitors. The Lakers have been rumored to be interested for a while. That's the team that I've maintained I think he's going to go to because they have picks. But, again, that's kind of an update on Valanciunas. In terms of Kuzma, you know, what I've been told is that – or what I guess what I've read realistically is that I'm sure the Wizards are shopping him. I just don't know what the market is. I don't know if there's a good market. I mean, I look ahead, Kyle Kuzma has been – this is the worst season in 4 years. Efficiency-wise, scoring numbers are down, rebounds are down, assists are down, turnovers, you know, still 2.3 a game, like been injured a bunch. I just don't really see why a team would look at that and say, here's a first-round pick. I hope they do. You clearly can't get 2 first-round picks, but I think you got to get value now. I've seen a couple of people say they should not trade him and then maybe he rebuilds his value next year, which is fine because he's on a descending contract. He's only making, I think, 20 mil or something next year. But look, I think you got to move on if you can, if you get a first-round pick for him. So that's kind of that's the Kuz thing. I'm looking through the agenda. I think we kind of hit it all. Again, you know, a couple of things to recap. I talked about Butler and Champagne. They've not really played in the last couple of games. They need to play more. Need to play more. And I don't think they will because this team is tanking and they're trying to showcase the vets. Somebody, you know, put a call down to Brian Keefe and said, look, these guys are playing a lot and they're playing well. I know that, but, you know, we're not moving them. And we got some other, you know, agendas to hit. We got some other guys that we need to showcase to contenders. And let's go ahead and do that before we move forward with the season. Talked about the asking price for Valanciunas, reportedly from The Athletic. Wizards could possibly get 2 second-round picks. Maybe that's it. But I do think he will get dealt. That's me that thinks that he will get dealt, not them. Updated tank standings, Wizards 6-32. They suck as expected, and they got a pretty much 2-game lead on New Orleans. So they're sitting pretty at the bottom there. Not much comp other than Charlotte. And look, the road ahead doesn't get any easier. Phoenix at home, 6-game road trip. Might be the Jazz, probably not. And if you don't, and you end that road trip without winning a game, that's 13 in a row. So not the greatest of times in D.C. It's pretty bland. At least the Commanders won. My first playoff win I've ever experienced. That was pretty sick. At least the Commanders won. That's cool. The Caps are the best team in the NHL, or at least tied for it. But then you got – it's like two great things going on in D.C. sports, and then you got the Wizards, who are the worst team in the league, the Nats, who refuse to spend any type of money on anybody ever, especially retaining their own guys, but that's a whole nother thing. But at least the, you know, Washington fans have two sports, you know, 50% hit rate of the major four. That's kind of going well. So look, you know, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. I appreciate all you guys for listening. I'm trying to get these up. I think I'm going to try to do every Wednesday, and I might throw one in during the weekends, depending on if anything big happens, but I like kind of having a big news dump, every Wednesday, once a week. And instead of breaking down individual games and kind of recapping them, I like just talking about the major storylines. I think that's kind of what people come here for, especially at this point in the rebuild, is that most of the people, correct me if I'm wrong, aren't watching many of the games, if any of them. And I think they come here to kind of get a breakdown of what's going on so they can stay up to date. And I think speaking about the main storylines instead of just breaking down individual plays and stats and games. I think that's a lot better of a strategy. So I think that's what I'm going to do moving forward. Again, like I say at the end of every episode, if you got any questions, if you got any thoughts, any hot takes or whatever, DMs are always open. I always respond to them pretty quickly. So you can always hit me up there at Greg Finberg on Twitter. Other than that, you know, I appreciate all the support on the show. I appreciate you guys for sticking with me throughout this rebuild. I know it's not easy to continue to root for this team and, you know, be locked into everything, watch the games, but it's just going to make it all better when the Wizards finally, hopefully, emerge from this rebuild as contenders and are set up for a while instead of just being a bottom middle of the pack team. So again, that's going to do it for this episode. Appreciate all you guys for tuning in. And yeah, hope you have a good day. Go Wiz.